Hi, I'm Josh, and binder, B-I-N-D-E-R, binder.
Oh, God damn it.
Oh, that's just, I'll kiss you on your big dumb head.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Matt, and in order to get away from jokes like that that take me a moment to get, I'm going to retreat to my new cabin on Bone Lake, which I'm told has nothing to do with dead bodies in the lake and is all about the Bone Zone, which is why I will probably be kicked out immediately.
It's just up the coast from Pound Town, yes.
Oh, yeah, let's take a left at Albuquerque and head straight into Pound Town. If you hit Bone Lake, you've gone too far.
It's one of those pre-code Bugs Bunny episode things they just don't want to show anymore.
Amazing.
Let's see. This is Charlie Nerd Austin. And there's no possible way that I could come up with something clever to do with the title of Chompy and the Girls. So I'm just gonna white flag that son of a bitch, because like, it's not a thing I can come up with that. I thought I'd do some kind of Motown thing, and then I was like,
I was gonna go with. It's the reunited version of Josie and the Pussycats, but they had to get a new lead singer because Josie had that drug problem. So they got Jabberjaw, but that was copyrighted because he had a bad manager. So it's Chompy and the Girls.
God, Jesus Christ.
Well, did you guys not read The Hollywood Reporter? Am I the only one? What the fuck?
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, and Picks. That's all I know. And Chompy and the Girls.
Nice.
And this is Harsho Hot Dog. So first up, we have a short this week called The Brink. Or
To the Brink.
El Rincón. Al Rincón. Right, that's to the corner. Never mind. To the window. To the walls.
Skeet,
to
skeet.
Narnia. To the Brink. To the Brink is the angel and devil on a dude's shoulder singing a song about how the world sucks and is driving us all insane. And everybody is made of spare parts and giant teeth. I should mention it's stop motion. So it's less horrifying, more horrifying. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends on your, yeah.
It is a very completely realized functional thing. Like, it is... And I don't mean that as faint praise or anything. I mean, like, it is like if you watch the James and the Giant Peach that Henry Selick did, or like the Coraline that he did, it is a very singular, self-contained vision for how every single piece of that world ought to look.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt that with this. This just feels like it is so thoroughly realized that there could be hours of these characters out there somewhere. And then, maybe so yeah, I was really impressed with the way that it was put together, for sure.
Well, a lot of the writing is very clever too. There's so certain lines there that really kind of tickled me, because, like, you know, it's, you know, we in the past we've always had this thing where Matt hits the musicals, and
I do,
and Josh and Charlie love musicals, and I was gonna say, like, I wouldn't want to paint Josh with one brush, and there's a lot of musical theater that makes me want to punch a puppy. So, like, I'm not exactly like all in on all musical theater things, but a good clever writer will always make me happy. You know, like, I think about like the song from Tangled, from The Ugly Duckling. You know, I have a dream, she has a dream, and it's like, it is so fucking well written. It's so well written, and it's like, so when somebody's got a good idea and some cleverness in the way that they're writing, I'm all about that. Like, I just dial into that like crazy. Like, one of the funniest things that SNL's done the last several years was the snitching digital short, which, if you've not seen it, you must, because it is so goddamn funny. And it's just so clever. It's the better end of Lonely Island, kind of. It's just really so fucking funny. So yeah, so anytime anybody's is smart with their writing, and then I'm all about it. So, like, this fell out of the good category in terms of writing. I thought it was very clever. Some of the lines just went, so it tickled me. And plus, I love the art, the look of it. It's just like, it's lovely.
Yeah, it's that gorgeously garbagey, grotesque. Yeah, grotesquery. Like, yeah, it just, everything is, looks like it's cobbled together and just barely even hanging together. But I think, like you said, Josh, it also is clearly very deliberate design decisions that are, I think, really smart and clever and cool. So, yeah, I think this thing's just gorgeous.
Well, there are a couple of little mechanisms too that just they kind of go like, ugh, when like when the dog goes into his into the guy's head and it's like the face skin kind of moves around. It's like, ugh.
Yeah. They just like dump a bunch of cocaine on his brain and then just like dunk his head in it. And you're like, yeesh.
like, so yeah, I mean, it's really, really impressive. Like just macabre and sort of dark and just sort of, I don't know, just really, really cool thing. Like,
I mean, this is the thing where you have an angel with knives for hands.
Yeah, right.
Like Gabriel Scissorhands.
Well, that's one of the funniest things about it is that like they're not the angel and the devil are not like singing necessarily opposite points of view, but they're both just sort of like they're sort of a duet.
It's kind of like they're in conversation, like as though they have not decided. Like the devil guy is definitely like on the side of like, yeah, just get fucked up because the world's fucked up. And the angel guy's like, yeah, but are we sure that's the best idea? But he's not saying that isn't, he knows it's like there's a better option. He just wants to make sure that's the best idea. And they kind of by the end go, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, let's fuck this noise. And then they make out. You know what? Yeah. All right. Little forked tongue and everything.
Yeah, it was just I don't know, just had like a just this very kind of gleefully dark kind of tone to it, which I think given the imagery and given the other kind of things, I don't know that this like could work for every single person, but I think you have the right palette for it, like this is just catnip for just people who have wrong brains. And I thought it was terrific. I wanted to definitely say thank you for finding this. That was awesome.
Yeah, this is one I think would be a blast to see in a theater with people, because I think it would be just, it's so bizarrely unexpected, because I guess I sort of assume when you're going for something that's got this much, like so much production value is necessary to make this work, that you'd assume they'd skimp on the music or the songwriting or the stop motion wouldn't be all that great or something, but it really feels like this fires on all cylinders. So I think people should watch it.
That's animation. I'm glad you mentioned that too, because that's another thing. Stop motion takes a lot of time.
Yeah, so Jesus.
Like, you know, so like they had to have everything done the right way to make this work.
I find it best not to think about how much time things like this would have taken, because that way lies madness.
Like, yeah, I just don't even want to think about how
this like 4-minute thing. This was probably a year of someone's life.
Yeah, and it's just like holy mackerel. So like that's another part of it that's so impressive. And I will say the other thing I'll say real quick, super quickly about the music part, is, you know, there's like for every one example of somebody who really gets the dark, gleefully creepy thing, there's a lot of people who try, and I just like oftentimes, and I feel a little bit bad about it, but oftentimes I get the where it seems like they saw House of a Thousand Corpses and watched, you know, Captain Spaulding, and were like, that'll be the aesthetic, and they'll do a lot of, we're playing the accordion and we have striped pants kind of feel about things, and I just sort of like, I can't roll my eyes hard enough. Kind of like it's like they do a little tinkling on and off key piano, and it's just sort of like, enough already. But every once in a while, somebody gets into that realm and then nails it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this just definitely like is in that realm where I just kind of go like, I want to hug it so hard. So it's sort of, it's the kind of thing that falls into that realm that just made me really happy. This is just so lovely. And it's like, well done, everybody involved.
There's like a
stop motion.
There's like a Tom Lehrer vibe to the music.
For sure.
It was put together because like some of the less tame things that he wrote are very macabre, you know, like I hold your hand in mine and it's like, I'm sorry that I killed you. Your love was so divine, but until they come and take me, I will hold your hand in mine. You know, like delightful. So yeah, this has that same kind of music hall goth feel to it. Utterly, utterly cool and original. Do watch it. I say.
Sweet. Yes, very much so. Yeah, this is really
I don't care what those other guys say. They said
I did it. I found it. Cool. I found a good one.
Did. Yeah, it was really terrific.
They're out there. See, I don't know. I don't blame you when you find a bad one.
Oh, I do.
Like, but I praise you when you find a good one, because
that's how we roll.
Yeah, well, the one time, I mean, you always have to remember, Matt, that like there was that one time many years ago where we had the title of a thing and all three of us found a different one.
It's true.
It was all titled the same thing. So
that might have been when I started linking the actual short in the show notes. That might have been the reason we'd do that now.
Like, there was also a feature that we did that too.
There is. I can't remember what it was.
Like
was you would watch something different.
Yeah. And the two of you were saying things, and I felt like I was losing my mind just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what made me lose my mind a little bit?
Ooh, do tell.
Bone Lake. El Lago de Huesos.
Huh.
Oh, de Huesos.
Bone Lake. I just, every time I think that title, I just picture Wayne and Garth.
Yep.
Like, for Bone Lake. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
How was Bone Lake?
Bone Lake.
I hear it's deep and wet. Yup.
Yeah. It is, it's hard not to just put some kind of English on the title.
Yeah.
Well, the word bone, I just, you can't, like, it's just sort of like.
Yeah, it's, bone's a good comedy word.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, you can't not do it. So this was, this is one of these things where the normal Charlie approach to sometimes where it's sort of like, well, they've not followed the decorum and the rules and the establishment of this other thing. Like, that guy just took a night off with this because, like, at a very basic level, vehicles have, like, GPS coordinate things and phones have last locations and they have wall evidence and they've done this several times. And it's like, no part of that makes any fucking sense at all. Zero.
No, not at all.
None. Not even a little bit. We're not talking, and they have, like, these public listings, like, oh, well, we booked you another one in Florida and you'll never show up to that one. And like, they'll throw them off the trail. Like, yes, because they wouldn't have looked at the previous booking, for fuck's sake. So, like, all the logic, I just kind of go like, eh, it's fine. I just kind of, whatever. I just kind of do a big old shrug and just kind of like, so that's my approach with this one is I just kind of like, I just took all that like logic rules thing and just sort of went like, no, we're just going to play this game with these. And we're just going to go along on its terms. And so, like, and that's what I think made it a lot more fun. It's just kind of like I'm just going to take all logic and say, nope, no logic in this one. Like, we're just going to kind of take it on its terms. Like,
because it could almost be a parody of, like, the V.C. Andrews kind of potboiler, chiller, chicklet, thriller things. There's not a lot of space between this and Flowers in the Attic or something like that, where it's like, instead of ta-da lesbians, it's ta-da incest. But it's not a parody, I don't think. Like, it is taking itself as seriously as it needs to.
I don't read it as parody. I might be the one that didn't.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I kind of was able to roll with that to a degree. I think I kind of tried to put that aside because, like, we've, you know, or at least I have beaten the point to death of, like, when a weirdo comes into, like, my space, like, mm-hmm. there's a level of, like, reality and normalness I'm going to need, or I'm just going to nope out of there. And, like, I get that movies don't work if that people don't ignore that instinct sometimes. So, like, the whole idea of, like, oh, it must have been double booked, I guess we'll share it. And I'm like, yes, okay, because movie, fine. But once you kind of get into the whole gaslighting, manipulation, blah blah blah, and you're like, okay, like, they're circling the drain and they're gonna kill this couple, whatever, I felt like this was the, like, Timu version of other movies we've seen where this just kind of felt lifeless to me. Like, there's something about this that just never got, it certainly never got scary. I don't know that it never got, like, roll my eyes cringy. It was just sort of like, yeah, okay, you're doing the thing, but, like, it lacked, and maybe it's just because we've seen enough movies that have weirdos showing up in people's houses and fucking with them, but, like, it lacked any kind of an edge for me, or maybe the characters weren't interesting enough. I don't know. Like, it seems like you guys both like this more.
I liked it pretty well. I did feel like it starts with a promise that it doesn't keep, because the beginning of this movie is the first set of victims, a la, like, a slasher movie, running through the woods naked, and the guy gets an arrow sideways through his balls.
And yeah, that is the first note I took, which is, where are these people shooting from? Because he's getting hit in the back and then from the sideways through the balls. And I was like, that doesn't work. You'd have to have two different snipers. And they're like, oh, I guess that does kind
of
work.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ever since Scream, you can't ever just have one.
Yeah. Right.
But then after that, once you start the like psychological manipulation part of our program, I was expecting more of a like speak no evil kind of
right
level of fucking with people and being fucked with. And that's a lot more subtle. And then it's weirdly chaste. And I feel like I'm the guy who has to always talk about this shit. And I'm sorry, but that's just where my head is at most days. It is weird to me to have like a guy hanging dong at the beginning of your movie. And then when your main characters are having this like sexual, like seduction kind of perverse thing on the periphery, you start doing the Austin Powers thing.
Right.
I thought that was really strange. And if they had kept it more naturalistic, like when she sees the guy outside taking a shower,
mm-hmm.
he should have been full dong to the camera.
Just standing there. Yeah. Showing us that it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I
didn't like that scene either. I think that's maybe why.
That. Like, I'm not really interested in dicks except for my co-hosts, but
right.
Just, it felt weird. And it was like, it would be so much more unsettling if we are seeing what she's seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's something about this that is, God, it's tricky to, I guess it's like compared to something like maybe a Speak No Evil, or I'm trying, even like something that isn't trying to do the same level of like people hiding in plain sight as the bad guy, but something like The Strangers, right? Where you're, okay, eventually you're stuck in a house and people are trying to kill you. It just felt like this was such a light touch on all that. Like the things they do to mess with them aren't as dark and sinister as you'd kind of want them to be. Cause like the idea of finding out the one guy is going to propose to his girlfriend, right? And he shows him his grandmother's ring. And it's like, every time they show them anything of interest, they turn around and at least in, you know, in movie time, 3 minutes later, and in like the time passing in the film, within minutes sometimes or hours, they just straight up bring up information this couple has just told them. And it's often like one person told it, so they're giving the information to the other. But when they do things in front of each other, like the proposal with the ring, to have that not be a moment that is an explosive blowout that would then drop all the veneer of civility. Like, to me, that was like, that should have been your climax. That's too big of a moment to have people try to override it with politeness. Whereas like, yeah, seeing someone naked, you know, showering outside, that works as an uncomfortable thing, but we'd all try to manage that in a way of making it as little of a deal as possible.
Although I did kind of enjoy the, let's see how he talks his way out of this one and gets them to stay. I actually was in for some of that, where it's like, obviously this is something you could never come back from. And he's like, well, let me explain why we're not ready for our like mask off moment yet. And like, oh, well, that was fun. I don't know. I felt weirdly indulgent to this. Kind of seems like you did too, Charlie.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I'll give it to you. Why not?
Well, and the thing that, so one of the things that I you know, and kind of opposite of your side of it, Matt, is that like, I think, you know, for horror movies, certainly there's always the thing of being like, you know, what would make sense in this situation is if we split up.
Right.
Or, you know, like that kind of thing. Like there's always that ask, you know, like, and then I feel like I'm often the person that says like, yeah, this thing's acting hinky. Like there'll be a Charlie shaped hole in the wall right. that run down the street. And so like, you know, just in movies, but just in life, I kind of have strong spidey sense sort of.
We have a skeptical bent. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just kind of like, I don't, you know, like not because you don't want to assume everybody's bad, evil, or terrible, because most of the time that's not true, but it's just one of those things that like, in general, I'm going to be kind of going along with it. But I do think though that there is a social influence to social situations where people get into all kinds of crazy situations because of like a, well, to not rock the boat type situation. Like there was a thing a couple of years ago, so maybe more of the, keep forgetting the pandemic. So it was prior to that, there's an era near, an era, I can't talk, an era, nope, Let's try that again. Area. There we go. Hey. Near downtown called Rainy Street. And it's like it's popular with, now it's kind of an overrun with tech broke finance dipshits and it's kind of sucks. But it's like it's like a bunch of bars that are near each other. It's like a walking area, whatever. And it gets really popular and it gets like a ton of people down that go down there. And there's a thing that was happening several years ago now where like you get like, oh, groups of friends or people like all saying, oh, that become people are all hanging out together. And then what was happening was it was like this coordinated thing where they were basically like signaling out somebody, like one of these financy bro-y types who's probably kind of social, kind of like some engineering type person who's like kind of awkward. And like, oh, they're kind of on with everybody else. And like, oh, part of this group and we're all having a great old time. And then, you know, drug him and then use his like face ID to like open up his phone and like get his money, basically. Yeah. And like not causing like harm, not like murdering, stabbing necessarily, although there was a couple stabbings in the back end of it, but there was,
you gotta have a couple.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, you can't go out a couple stabbings, but it was like, and it was, but every single time it was like this person who was like some kind of engineering person working at some tech company who was kind of socially awkward and kind of like kind of a magoo. And then like was kind of thrust in a situation where maybe your spidey sense goes like, maybe I shouldn't be romping around in the middle of the night through a bunch of bars with these people I don't necessarily know. But it's like, I'm going to look like kind of a dork if I don't, kind of thing. And so like your logic tells you don't do that. But then the social construct kind of says like, well, maybe it should be okay. I got kind of.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how like scams work, right? Like there's a certain inherent amount of like, okay, am I going to be a dick if I try to call out what seems like bullshit? Because then if it's not, I've ruined the social contract of not being a dick myself, you know? I just think like there's something to me a little more relatable about the idea of like going out somewhere and meeting some nice people and hanging out and then just getting too drunk and being taken advantage of. That seems more normal to me than the idea of like sharing this living space and constantly being like, these guys are fucking weird. And then even like the couple occasionally talking to each other about it. And I feel like all I would need is the person with me to also feel weird. That would be enough for me to go, oh, then good. Let's just go.
That was, like, and that was the one thing that I want to give them a ton of credit. I really loved two things about the dynamics with the people. Was one was the fact that like our guy the couple that are
Diego,
yeah. I like the fact that he's kind of a doofus. Like he doesn't have a John McClane to him.
Yeah,
he's kind of awkward and sort of floppy and like kind of more normal, like of a like the way a person would potentially deal with a stress.
Well, he doesn't scream protagonist.
Yeah, like he's very much like, it's like, you know, and that's not to pick on him or anybody that's like him in real life.
No,
it's like, but it's just interesting that like they did a good job of like not making him like a pathetic, like nerdy guy, like or like a weird, creepy, like a Todd Schultz character. Like it's not that. He's just sort of more awkward and less of a hero. Then like
he's just a guy.
Oftentimes these kind of stories would do. They would automatically do that. And but I love that that wasn't that, you know?
Yeah. But at the same time, he's got this idea of machismo in him that helps him stay in the situation. And I thought that was interesting because we see that this relationship is clearly on the rocks to begin with. Like she's borderline insufferable. He is super passive. They like her demands are probably reasonable, but the way that she puts them across is upsetting. He is like macho man to the point that he is threatened by the idea of her having a sex toy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, completely uninterested in doing anything to her in bed that would make the toy not necessary. And he seems to want to be like, I'm making the decisions and I'm doing all the things and I am a brilliant writer, so I'm going to, you know, you're going to support us while I write. Kind of made me think of Jim Higuera a little, Charlie.
Yeah.
Sorry, high school buddy. But I thought that played into it some, where he saw that other couple that had everything that he wanted to have and couldn't bring himself to show the weakness of like listening to his girlfriend and maybe paying attention when she says that things are off. And he wanted, he seemed to me like he still wanted to make all the calls, and that made it easier for him to get
the kid. That was part of it. Well, that was part of it, but I also think they did a good job of like with the female half of that couple, where like there's aspects of that character where she is kind of like, you're like a, she's kind of annoying. But then it was like, but then also recognizing that like in the nature of people's relationships, like people have dynamics in the way that are not necessarily like easy to stomach if you're outside of it, or like, or easy to misinterpret, or other kinds of things. And that's just the dynamic of whatever the hell relationship that they're, that whatever their situation is. And so it's sort of like, I really liked that they kind of didn't make them just one thing. Like she wasn't just just an insufferable harpy character, and he wasn't
they're not the characters they would have been in the 80s.
Yeah, like, that's a perfect way to say it. Yeah, exactly. Like that would have been distracting to the point of just being
this could have been insufferable.
Yeah, you could have just been like, God, I just want this to end. And so like, so I really dug that they took that seriously enough to where she's not 100% right, he's not 100% wrong, and vice versa. And there's aspects of people's relationships that don't necessarily like jive necessarily with how it looks. And also the other thing too, that the movie did that was great, was that like, you know, in terms of like her column and like the dynamics of the relationship and the sexual components and this, that, whatever, and like the crazy couple are like kind of pushing that envelope to some degree. Oh, we just do this, oh it's this or whatever. And it's sort of like, it's like, yeah, but I mean, before we know that they're nuts and whatever, it's kind of like as I'm watching, I'm going like, yeah, but that's what weak, insecure people think. Oh, everybody should be like me. Yeah. And it's sort of like, it's one of those things where, to varying degrees in my personal life, in the course of my life, I've come across people, and sometimes they're great when it comes to their, whatever their situation is. Sometimes they're very much like, my way is the only way kind of thing. And I just kind of go like, I can't roll my eyes back far enough to just be like, oh, whatever. And so like, so I like that part of it was like, it's there, but that's not really the catalyst. But then when you fast forward and things start going hinky, when they work out their plan, they've got some problems going on. They've got some issues going on. They've got a bunch of shit happening, but like, they work out their plan of like her not taking the drugs and like, yeah, like, oh, she took off and like faking the whole thing. And then her coming out, like they have a, like, yeah, we got shit to deal with, but man, we're on team us.
Yeah, right now. That's the moment rules in the movie that had a pulse for me.
Yeah, like that was dope.
When they kind of do, they finally get to the like, yeah, let's trick them and whatever. And then when you have the four of them sitting in the living room or whatever, and they're like, lol, here's our master plan. And, you know, and they're like, okay, so you wanted to see if we would cheat on each other, and we didn't. We win. You fucked up. You know, like we are the people that are the proving your point wrong. And I was like, great, this is awesome. Like that you made the subtext text in a way that I found satisfying. And then they're like, yeah, so we're gonna kill you anyway. It's like, that's cool. So like, yeah, that scene, especially like that little hunk, I thought was great. Like I said, overall, I didn't really dig this, but just real quick, the things I liked. That scene, there's the bit when they're gonna leave, and the guy's like, if you leave now, you're not going to get your grandmother's wedding ring back. And he's like, I'll come back next week. And as he doesn't see it, but you see the guy go like, fuck. Because you see him just like improvising and sees it not work. And I was like, that's a great real character moment. I liked that a lot. And then skipping all the way to the very end, you know, when the two of them are stuck in the boat, that has to be a reference to The Graduate, right?
Yeah, I love The Graduate ending. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And I was like, fuck, that's really, really good. It's like one of the few movies I've seen that deals with what happens 4 minutes after the end credits start rolling in most horror movies, which is, oh, we're fucked.
I thought that was fantastic. So much lingering trauma. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really great. So like, there are things to like in this, even for me. I just think overall the experience didn't hang together, but it seems like it worked for you guys, and maybe it worked for most people. I feel like this is a movie I keep seeing get talked about, But whenever people would bring it up on, you know, Reddit or whatever, like, it was always someone saying, hey, I'm not going to spoil anything, but you should really see Bone Lake. And so I stayed away from spoilers. And I'm trying to figure out what it was that, do you guys know, is there something that specifically, like, caught people's, is it just that, like, oh, there's an arrow through a nutsack and that was enough for the internet to go nuts? Or is it like, oh, it's kind of pervy and sexy, so that was enough?
I think that was more what it is, like the brother and sister thing, which, by the way, if you watch real closely, because this was last year from Fantastic Fest, and watching it again, I was like, oh, yeah. So, like, all the flashbacky things where they're kind of Scooby-Dooing the thing, and they're kind of talking about their upbringing, and then their parents are keeping them apart, and this, that, whatever else, like, I think it's not strongly implied, but I think it's sort of, like, a little bit implied that maybe one of them is adopted, or like they're not actually biological brother and sister, but what I think,
so it's Clueless,
but it doesn't matter as much as it is sort of like, it doesn't really matter so much as it's just sort of like, he's kind of go like me, and he's just kind of, and so, and then when they become more manic and more loopy, it just sort of, you go like, it just happens to be two people who are just nuts. And it's like, okay, that works.
Yeah, there's kind of two psychopaths that happen to get along.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, I'll take that.
There's someone out there for everyone. Maybe it's your sister and she's also an axe murderer.
Well, and then also, too, God bless them for, like, you know, I'm getting to the point anymore where, like, you know, we always talk about, like, not making the mistakes of the 80s kind of stuff. The fact that either one of the other two crazies, like, when they are poked with and stabbed with things and hit with things, whatever else, like, they carry that damage forward. They don't just sort of, like,
you
know, grab a mushroom and go boop, 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 and they're fine. It's like, it's not, like, they limp and they're bleeding and they're whatever. And it's like, I want that to be the standard now. Like, I just...
Yeah,
and it's like my requirement anymore. It's like,
well, that was part of the joy of Scream when it came out, was like an unstoppable killer that got his ass beat. You know, like, it was so refreshing. And now I think you see that more often, that, like, oh, people kind of fight back against the thing. They're all Jason, so to speak. But there's something to the idea of trying to make them a little more real like that, which I think is good. I don't know. I've been turning this movie over in my head for like a week trying to figure out what I think, but yeah.
I think I wouldn't oversell it to somebody to say, like, this is kind of a Skinamax movie level of thing in the middle. It's not Speak No Evil, and it's not trying to be that. It's that level of, like, pay cable mind game 90s movie you would get.
But it's better than that, too, right?
And on either end, though, are, like, some really fun, gory set pieces, right? Because all of that shit, you know, the taunting her to hit him with the axe, and then she gets him in the back of the head, and he just falls forward under the chainsaw. Like, yeah.
That's pretty great. That
was groovy.
The foot stabbing through the dock.
Oh God, I felt that in my leg. I was like, God.
Yep. That had me, like, I'm sitting on my couch watching it, and I went and lifted both my feet off the ground. It's like,
just
in case
they're under there, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's one of those things you do, though. Like, you just go, ooh, and you like I'll watch someone get, like, you know, some kind of finger trauma in a movie, and like, I'll lift my arm and like pull my hand to my chest, and it's like, good job. Like, you made me
now
win.
We're safe,
like,
buddy, that. You big dumb
ass. good job.
Well, the one that really got me with this one was those that you just described, but then when they're in the lake,
yeah,
her foot touches the hood of some car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I just giggity. I was like, yeah,
yep.
Because then you can imagine what that would feel like on your foot, and your foot goes, I think we touched a car hood. And Brandon goes, that can't possibly be correct.
Yeah, and that's where, like, I would be fleeing so quickly. I'd be like one of those Jesus lizards where you're running across the surface of the lake. Well, I've always hated swimming in lakes because I don't like the idea of my leg touching something and being like, oh no. And just, ugh. Yeah, that to me was also a bad, like, nope, that's a real life gross fear realized.
Maybe these guys haven't seen Motel Hell.
That could be.
You know, the filmmakers have.
That's true.
So the only thing, so my big takeaway with this is that, like, like I said, it's the turn off the logic rules brain guy and just sort of go along with it and just kind of run through this romping thing. I liked at the end, you guys highlighted the thing at the end where they're on the boat. There's that kind of like, it's like the penguins of Madagascar when they finally get to Antarctica and they're standing there on the ice floe for a good 15 seconds. And the woman just goes, well, this sucks. And I did like how they're on the boat. They're just sort of there, you know, then this is all fucked up and they, yeah, whatever. But then like they did this thing with the film stock, the way they did it, where once the credits started rolling, it was almost as if they were like, yeah, but this has all been a movie or this has all been a play or like it kind of the feel of it changed, which I thought was a stupid decision.
Oh, like, I didn't notice that. I might have turned it off too quickly because I was not that into it.
Because like that's like the one thing that kind of irritated me. But then like so the other thing about this too is that like it, God, I'm going to sound like a pretentious prick by saying this.
Yeah.
So the premise of two people booking the same Airbnb, like to me, like it's clever, but it's like a good first draft. Like I think you take the next step and be like, okay, what if it's you have a group of friends, you have multiple couples, and they're booking this place, and then the hosts are gonna like are also staying there too because there's like a guest house, or you know they're like way more wanting to be like socially involved than you would expect them to be, and you just kind
of we've seen at least two like that.
Yeah. Well, that would be the rental, yeah,
yeah.
And it's like just to put it, so like. And the only reason I say that is that it ultimately, like, I think this could have been even more of a ball slapping good time if you had more victims and you had more mind games and more fucking around, like the one we watched
like last week.
The one with the
body
the
swapping.
The little machine.
Run.
Like part of what makes that work so beautifully is the number of bodies.
Yeah.
In there, you know. And so, like, that's the only thing I could think of is, like, yeah, booking the same Airbnb as a setup is fine, but just I think it needed, like, one more layer. Then they just get one more dynamic, and maybe you have somebody who's, like, they've been friends for a long time. Maybe they were dating or whatever else, but then, oh, they're not anymore, or they're some other dynamic, some dynamic of some kind or other. Something else where you get more bodies. Because I think that's the one thing that it was to really make it a romp would be more bodies.
Mm.
But as it stands, I mean, I still did kind of enjoy our two crazies. I mean, they were sort of like, they're a fun level of crazy. I like the fact that they didn't make the lady a shrieking banshee of a villain. Like, she's nutty, but she's not squeak, 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 squeak level of crazy, which is like,
that's which would still be the 80s version of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's always hangers, that.
Yeah.
But, and this was directed by one woman. I don't know any about the writer. I know that the director was a lady. Maybe that plays into it to some degree, because it's just sort of like, and I just find that more refreshing. And I think it's more interesting, ultimately. It's just like, it's just like more of this kind of evolution.
Yeah, ultimately, like, I think the less you pay to see this, the happier you'll be. If you find this on Shudder, and your expectation is to be like, mildly to decently to like maybe a little north of decently entertained, like this will do the trick.
This would be a great folding laundry movie.
If I paid $20 to get the like simultaneous theater rental, I think I'd be pissed. Yeah. Kind of the Hocus Pocus 2 level of pissed. Like maybe that could have waited. I have kids. Sometimes you do what you got to do. But
yeah, it's not big. Josh, to your point, I mean, it's not big enough for that to be the
weird that it got a theatrical release and they were like super hyped it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That was an interesting thing in and of itself, was like how this did get kind of rolled out. I will never not be fascinated and surprised by that kind of thing. I don't know. I'm always surprised by that. It's always like, whoa, they got a remake of Silent House 5 years ago. It was like, okay.
If you market it as like a funny games level movie or like a Piranha Double D level of smutty movie, you're just going to disappoint people.
Yeah.
Either way.
It is kind of neither fish nor fowl. Maybe that's the problem for like so how you pimp it to people.
This tuna duckin of a movie, which is neither fish nor fowl, but both.
Oh, it's fowl.
I'm a 7.5 on it. Like nice. I had fun with it. I just wished that the director of the end segments would have shown up for the middle.
Yeah, you know, less keen on it than you guys. I'm not mad at it. There's definitely far, far shittier movies. And there's even stuff that's just not as interesting. I just think this lacked, it just needed a little more of like one aspect, I think, to get me in, whatever that would be. So it's like, yeah, it's a five. It's a middle of the road. 5 out of 10 cars submerged in a lake.
I guess you just what needed.
Yeah, I'm up with Josh's area there. I would call it a 7.5. Like I said, the fact that I could turn off logic rules guy in my head and just like just kind of take it on its own terms was like that was kind of a refreshing feeling. It was like sometimes I get kind of tired of that guy. Like, well they didn't follow this with this. Like, okay,
he did not file the paperwork with the district. Yes.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, enough already. Just shush, you silly person. And so, yeah, so like, taking it on its terms, it's a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, it could have been a little sluttier. It could have been a little bit rompier. It could have had a little bit more heart to it. But the fact that they told these characters' story, I certainly appreciate it. Like, you know, but I guess the biggest issue more than anything else is that as time goes along, you keep getting these really innovative and excellent things. So, you know, the hard eyes of the world and the spontaneousness of the world and like that are really moving things in the direction. And so that starts to become the bar, I guess, is that like, you know, just, I want that level of innovation and creativity. And so that's kind of, you know, what it boils down to is that, and you're just like, that's my expectation. And so I did it, but you know, all that thing said, I had fun with this ridiculous thing. So.
Hell yeah.
And we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about two other things. That's what we do. And coming up next, we've got editorially, I'm going to say Spellbinder or La Hechicera, perhaps.
Ooh,
all right. It's just a witch, but you know, like, what is a witch if not someone who binds spells?
Indeed.
I saw that she had jewelry on her pointer and her middle and her index finger, which means she is technically a three-ring spellbinder.
Damn it.
Goodness.
Goodness
gracious.
More entertaining than this movie.
This is going to be an interesting thing.
Wait, you didn't find this entertaining? This ruled.
Yeah, I love this. I thought this was great.
All flat. Okay, yes, please go, because all I have is that I thought it was pretty dull.
Oh, the
things that I find interesting about this, one that is written by and also directed by a woman in the late 80s, like that stood out to me just for starters. So I was like, whoa, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, that was an interesting thing. And then also that it has like the bummeriest ending, where it's sort of like you expect good old Tim Daly is going to pull it out and thwart the bad guys. And I said, like, nope.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Yeah, I think like to properly calibrate expectations, if people didn't watch this before listening to this, like this is the kind of movie that could be an MST3K movie. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Just, you know, this is on the level of like maybe a Warlock or something like that. It is just kind of silly.
Like a witch board.
Yeah.
Was the one that wrote, really, witch board 3. That's what it reminded me of, was 3.
It's and just the same right thing. Kind of 80s dumb, where like they spend so much time like at the office or like at that party at the main guy's house where you're like, this is all just like cruft that would have been like trimmed off of a modern movie. But boy, do we get some amazing 80s fashion through that. But they're doing things like they've seen movies, because like you get the bit where they have like the there's like a montage where they go out on like a little night on the town to the mall and shit, and it is like the Flavorite John Carpenter music that they're kind of like playing in the background. I'm like, okay, you know what you're going for, you just don't necessarily have the chops. But then like some of it is just fucking funny, like when all the cultists are chasing after them in the mall and stuff, like Did you guys notice that as they get on the little escalator going up and like clueless mm-hmm. to the guy pursuing them from behind, that guy's trying to shove a baby in a stroller out of the way. Yeah. Follow him up the escalator. And I'm like completely just absorbed in this bit of business as this very not a real baby in a stroller that no one is freaking out about in a way in real life you would if someone just tries to like kick a stroller out of the way to get on an escalator faster. I'm like, oh, this is great. And then you have your like scanners moment, but it's like with pyrokinesis, I guess. And you just go, yes, more of this movie. What do you got for me next? Then you get our, because our main guy's a lawyer, which sort of comes into play at one point, but like we meet him defending the doomsday prepper guy that just has a shack full of guns and is just a fucking nutter, but he's also the most natural actor in the movie.
Yeah.
And it drove me nuts, so I had to go look him up. He's got like 300 credits.
Oh, yeah, he's been in everything.
Yeah, and I realized why I knew him. He is the guy that plays the priest playing Quarters in Beer Fest, the fucking Broken Lizard movie.
Oh.
And I was like, fuck that guy. Like, oh, my God. And all that seems like just insane 80s shit, except it's like plot relevant 30 minutes later when they need a place to stash crazy witch lady to try to protect her from the cult. And then you do get the moment when the cult is like, ah, they're all going to come after me to get me before I think it's the next full moon, right? That they have to sacrifice someone who goes to the site willingly and they want her to go. And I'm thinking like, well, there's no way in hell that'll work, even if they do get her, because she's not going willingly. And I'm trying to puzzle that out in my tiny little brain. But then they suddenly just have like 60 cultists just surrounding the house, just kind of leering through the windows.
God, I love that sequence. I love that sequence. It's so
legit kind of creepy. And then when they have like the windows kind of start bending in.
Oh, that is legitimately unpleasant.
That is fucking awesome.
That makes me uneasy. Like, ugh.
It's just like such a weird, like again, it's almost from another movie. It's like a little too good. I do have a note that I don't remember when it happens, but because I yelled it out loud watching it, I have a note that just says asymmetrical VHS stacking, because I assume they were going for the Ghostbusters reference. Just no one says anything about it because I wanted someone to say no sane person would stack VHS this. But no, and then my last note is just, I'm sorry, we're supposed to believe they are tied to the beach.
Yeah.
The beach is what they've been tied to.
Well, if you have like a stake when dug into the sand, really.
Medium rare or like.
Like a T-bone. You take the bone part.
Okay, see, got it in one. Nailed it. I withdraw my complaint, good sir.
What is a T-bone steak if not a like vampire killing steak with some meat on it? Come on.
Hell yeah. Aren't we all deep down a T-bone steak destined to kill a vampire with our bone?
So one of the other things I want to make sure I don't forget to share is Kristen watched a lot of this with me. And Kristen, the devotee of Teen Witch.
Yeah.
She was like, oh yeah, Kelly Preston's definitely got the Blake Lively thing going on. Robin Lively. Teen Witch thing. Because this is kind of like a Showtime-y, Showtime Channel-esque Teen Witch sort of thing. And God bless Tim Daly. Like, I like him in so much stuff, and I find him very enjoyable.
Yeah, he's great.
But in this, he's kind of given, like, you do expect at some point for him to be like to go into the bees type thing, because he's given zero to like 90 in the third act, and you're just sort of like, oh, okay. But otherwise it's just sort of like they do it, the switcheroo of it is great. The whole she's in on it, it was sort of a trap thing, which I thought was terrific. Mm-hmm. And just sort of like just how this thing unfolds, like I don't know, it's just like I had a lot of fun with it. I really
because by the time you get to the end and like the grand conspiracy is revealed to be even larger than you thought, it's so large that it encompasses kind of everyone. This almost becomes like it's a Wicker Man, or like almost an invasion of the Body Snatchers, though, because it's taking place in like the regular world, not an isolated community. Just like, oh yeah, just, you know, not, this is like what the people that think like there's a reptilian race that secretly like runs the world. Like this is like what they're afraid of. And so I was like, okay, that's fucking bonkers. And it's, this is a thing that I'm still, I wrestle with this a lot of, for whatever reason, in the last couple of months, I've been trying to figure out why sort of stupid, you know, low budget, maybe high effort, maybe even only medium effort sometimes movies work so much better for me if they're from like the 70s or 80s than if they're from anything after like 2000. And I think part of it is just like when it's something looks, if something looks old to me, and I don't mean like ancient and weathered, but like the way when you're a kid in the 80s, the people that dressed like this looked like old people. So they were just like doing this foreign thing and it's kind of already other. And so if I watch things that I think are set in that time period, I go, oh yeah, this is just like what people must have been doing in that time. All these things that make no sense. Plus you get some horror shit. But when I watch people that look like like myself and all the people around me every day, I go, this is just too normal to have the bonker shit happening. Mm. I think you need big hair and those flower print dresses and like the pantsuits and the skinny ties or whatever, like somehow all that shit that is not even kind of part of the storytelling of the movie, it's just what normal people were wearing at the time, it makes it easier to suspend the disbelief because it is also foreign. You know, it's the equivalent of watching a period, well, it is a period piece, I guess, at this point. But like, yeah, it's the idea, if you put people in like knights and armor shit, you kind of roll with it when they start sword fighting because you expect him to. And I guess if you dress people in, you know, 80s hair, I go, yeah, they're probably sacrificing someone to Satan. I remember that all kind of happening at the same time. So well, for whatever reason, that like makes me cut this movie a break.
Well, there's so many bits in this, like the thing where he goes to the rich people's house to try to find her, and like you talk about MST3K, like he goes into that back room and it's got like the pentagram on the ground, the wood floor, but it's that lighter colored wood floor. So I turned to Kristen and I was just like, oh, it's a satanic basketball team. It's like, it looks like a basketball court. It's just like little shit like that. The fact that he's driving, like he's like this like fancy spancy lawyer, which you gotta go by time. He's this kind of fancy lawyer, but he's driving that, glorious, but driving that fucking MG around LA. And it's just like, that thing never ran more than 10 miles in any given day. Like, come on now. Like, I love MGs, but they're fucking useless. And it's just like, all these little bits of this that just are like, what is happening with this? And then when all the cultists around this house and everything goes all crazy, and she saves the day with salt, and then when they wake up in the morning, and then there's like the spatulas on the ceiling, and there's like chairs stacked on things and all the other kinds of stuff, whatever else. Kristen looked up for what she's working on. She's like, is that a big fucking pencil? Like, it was like, yeah, I think it was like an 80s decoration. She's like, yeah, I guess.
It really was. A giant pencil was in like Punky Brewster's room and maybe the Drummond's house. Like, I feel like that was just a thing.
Once mankind developed that technology, we were drunk with power. Yes.
It's true. We could never go back.
So yeah, no, I think this is definitely just this is one of these kind of little oddities that sort of like it exists in the world and can be discovered, and it, like if you have fun with it, that's awesome. If you kind of go like, yeah, this just feels like second gear, then I think that's reasonable. You know, I don't think this is like so over the, like this is like a lot like watching Evil Dead 2. You know, like you watch Evil Dead 2, and if you're not like changed by that, there's something wrong with you. So like, but like something like this, like this is not Evil Dead 2. So they're like, you know, if you don't have a lot of fun with that, it's like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, it's like I thought it was a hoot. And to be honest, I don't know about you, Matt, but there's definitely parts of this where I'm laughing at the dialogue and laughing at the, you know. So it's like there is a little bit of like a look at this silly shit.
Yep. And but I think it is done in like, because you're in this kind of warm, pleasant place with it, or at least I was, that like, yeah, I can laugh at this and also kind of roll along with it. And, you know, maybe it's much like I described Bone Lake. This is probably best to be watched while folding laundry or something. Like, it's not going to demand rapt attention, but there is some fun to be had here. I don't know. There's probably not a ton more to say. At least I don't think I have much more, but I had a blast with this.
I just think it's funny because I was sitting here going, but wait, how could you think that Bone Lake was the more boring of them and that this grabbed you somehow? Like, how could that be? And like, well, how could it be that Bone Lake grabbed me and this didn't?
Yeah.
But it didn't. It really didn't. I was just like so bored through the first couple acts. I think that when it kicked a little bit, I wasn't, or it was too late to get the hooks in. And then
I can see that too. Yeah.
The ending is, I like that they went for that ending, but it's not like a shocking ending. You know, it's not like suddenly the whole town was a dream or something.
It's not like, quite like the entire bottom drops out on your reality. Yeah.
No, because it's like, it's the Wicker Man ending, you know, it's the, oh, was that Ben Wheatley? Kill List ending.
Yeah.
I think this maybe is a week where we realize that we destroy the things we love. I've seen movies do a plot like this with a lot more swagger, or at least like weirder or harder or funnier or something, that this just couldn't get me there. So yeah, it's like a 4.5 for me. It's, I don't need it.
Aw. Yeah, I think, you know, to try to both celebrate how much fun I had with this, but also be fair to its realistic place in the pantheon of cinema. Yeah, this will be like a 7 out of 10 for me. Yeah, just 7 out of 10. I got nothing clever to say.
Yeah, I think I'll probably, my God, sorry. I think I'll probably be in the same spot as Matt. Like I had a lot of fun with this. I enjoyed just the poofy sort of just absurdity of the thing. I kept thinking of like, of what was going on in the middle of the late 80s, like when some, like the other one, the one with Joe Piscopo that we watched years ago.
Dead Heat.
Where like that is 9 levels beyond in terms of creative freedom that no person should have ever given them, but they did anyway.
And Cocaine like, and had an executive producer credit on that.
Yeah. It's like, it's like this is much more mild. This is not, you know, of that to that extent. But at the same time, it's sort of like, you know, it's just sort of so. But again, I don't think if you watch this and don't have fun with it, I don't think it's like oh, you did it wrong. It's more like it's just a dumb, goofy thing that like it's just sort of, it's self serious at parts, and then other times like has a few, you know, genuinely kind of creepy moments. And I really love above everything else that this whole, it takes all these cultists, right, and they're gonna do this big Michael Douglas the game level of deception on a dude, and they get to the end, they get him, they out the heart goes, and they're like yay, and then it's sort of like, and like, all right, we gotta get the next one, like, oh boy. And it's like, and I love that they're like they're taking over the world, but it's super inefficient.
Yeah, it is just kind of like back to the salt mine.
Yeah, it's just like,
to run the same gag. Yeah,
it's just like we gotta go one. We do it one guy at a time. That's just sort of like, have you ever thought about getting a group together like a party bus? Like no. We do one and then we do the next one.
That's true.
Have pride in our work.
If you just need some dipshits to show up willingly to sacrifice them, why don't you just like have a party bus pull up in front of a bar and just be like, we're going to the strip club, and like 40 dudes will just come on.
It's like, that's From Dusk Till Dawn.
That's a good point, actually. So we've seen that movie too.
If you can find cheaper pussy anywhere else, fuck it. See, now what good is social media if we don't have a trend where people are either lip syncing or delivering that speech in different accents and different like impersonations of celebrities? Like, how would that sound if Jennifer Coolidge did it? Like, give me some of those most common, you know, what Jerry Seinfeld, you know, you can find sheep or pussy. It'd be great. It's not me that's going to do it because I'm terrible at it, but
I'm for it. Should.
Yeah. So finally, speaking of weird little things, let's talk about Chompy and the Girls, for which my level of affection is shocking.
Oh.
I really enjoy the hell out of this. This is a really
yay,
very low budget kind of thing. It's got a shagginess to it. It's got just a, but it's just an effortlessly strange kind of movie. And I realized it's this subgenre that I kind of like, which is just shit gets weird one night.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you got your more grounded Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle where like normal human things happen, just unlikely things. But my favorites are like The World's End or Dude, Where's My Car, which I also have just irrational levels of affection for because they're like, and then we ran into aliens, and then the aliens had pet unicorns, and then the unicorns shit out a whole new universe. It's just like, sure. Yeah. This is a movie about a demon that has infiltrated our reality, and the only person who can stop it is an entity who looks like a normal man, except he can open his mouth like 4 feet wide, and inside his mouth then is a portal to another dimension. And this starts from a place where just like 20-something girl is feeling like depressed and suicidal and decides to connect with her estranged father that she's never met. And they're meeting in the park when just this plot just kind of kicks in and just keeps going.
Yeah.
And it is. I was so here for it. Like, I'm just bumped along with this.
It is like. It's hard to explain, perhaps, without someone having seen it, but there's this incredible tightrope that they're walking where I'm going to assume they sort of knew they could only accomplish so much with like the resources they had. Mm. So like, yeah, our protagonist girl is like a heroin addict and suicidal. And that basically just means she has kind of like weird dark makeup around her eyes, and that's just kind of shorthand for like, yeah, so like she's got a drug problem and she's kind of like strung out. Okay, like we're not gonna go like Requiem for a Dream level of reality to get there, like we don't have the time or the money, so like, but you know what we're going for, right? And like it's up to us to kind of go, yeah, okay, now what? And they go, okay, well, tell you what, now we're gonna go do this. And you have to kind of go, sure, that's kind of like put together like a school play a bit, but we get what you're going for. Yeah, I'm on board. And it kind of leads you through the whole movie like that, I think, on just like earnestness and kind of gleeful weird. And like a lot of things I could see myself criticizing in a movie that I didn't like as much, I just sort of rolled with here and said, hey, good for them for finding a way to make it work.
The matter of factness of some of those things, just like, oh shit, you ran over the mouth angel. I ran over the mouth angel? Shit, I ran over the mouth angel. Yes, of course. Why not? But then also it's got that kind of go-ish energy to it, where when our protagonist is trying to get help from her drug dealer, Lotus, who is just great as well.
He's so good.
And you have that whole energy of running through the parties and everything, but then just, oh my God, the guy is coming. And she says, Lotus, can you make a magic circle? So many times. And every time she said it, I thought it was hilarious.
It was the best joke in the movie. That is the big in bold note I have, that she's like, Lotus, can you make a magic circle? And he's like, oh, see, this is the problem. Everybody just thinks that you can just do that and you can take these ideas from wherever and just make them work for it. And he kind of nods off. And there's a beat and she goes, hey, Lotus, can you make a magic circle? And he kind of wakes up and goes, yeah, why? It's so good,
because then you forget, and this is the kind of movie where you forget that Lotus the drug dealer nobly tries to save a girl from getting roofied by drinking her drink.
Yes,
instead of just telling useless. Her right, and so he's just narcoleptic for half the movie. I liked Dad. He's that weird raw-boned like Conan O'Brien fucked Crispin Glover kind of dude.
I was thinking the guy from, he's one of the Daves in Office Space. You're into the Bobs, the guys that are doing the efficiency. No, the efficiency consultants. The guy that's got the glasses, like the skinnier tall guy. Like he kind of reminded me of the off-brand that guy. And he's playing awkward to a level, which makes me wonder if he is not himself a bit awkward.
Yeah, there was that Crispin Glover level of,
yeah, like, there you go.
How much is this acting? You're just,
it's so good.
Can barely muster up the strength, and then has got his wife chasing them all around the town. Like all of the human stuff is working really well, and then just throwing the completely absurd into that, like paranormal stuff in there, is just catnip to me. You start with the characters, you add the craziness, and it just, it works so well.
Yeah, so I'm so pleased that you like this, Josh, because I was wondering if this was going to be like, I was curious, like if this was going to be something that you would be down with, or if you would, I wasn't sure, but I think, at least I hope, that one of the reasons why this worked for you was that there is a heart to it.
Like, oh yeah, huge.
And
yeah.
That's, and like that is the thing that I think like makes this such a weird oddity, because like on its surface you have the big, you have the guy with the big face and the little replicant little girls and all the stuff. It's like all this bonky shit and this very lo-fi shaggy thing. But at its core, there's some like kind of, you know, legitimately or serious kind of human stuff that's in there. And I just kind of, I don't know. There's something, there's a real beating heart that's in there. It's like the last movie ever made, one that was from Panic a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that has a beautiful heart to it. And then there's one from like the, was it 2009? The Revenant, not the Inuyasha one. The one about the guy who's like a soldier who's like, comes back to life. Whereas like that one is more, that one's going more for like crime thriller things and not as, not like funny necessarily. But like it could have just been a buddy cop zombie sort of a, you know, smash 'em up thing. But it has way too much sincere, like heart hurt at its core that makes it like there's something, there's got more to it than just some gross out things and kind of actiony thrillery kind of stuff. And like that one, I think, is another one that has a big old heart in it. It's like, that's one of the reasons why I thought this was so cool. This one, this is just like, it could have just been a trauma like thing, and that would have been what it is, and okay, fine. But boy, some of that stuff with the daughter and the dad, it's like, that's something that did put some thought into it. They weren't just slapping it on a piece of paper and then calling it an afternoon. Like, there's some serious stuff in there.
Yeah, and like, now that I think about it, she isn't just the, like, well, we had to figure out how to graft Hot Mess onto this character.
Yeah.
So, she's got a drug problem. You know, like drug problem, whatever. Put that on there. You know, the same way that people will be like, well, she was molested when she was a kid. That's just her, you know, reach into the bin and grab backstory for whatever. And I don't feel like that with her. It feels like somebody who knows something about addiction, either through themselves or a family member or something, wrote that character to be this way and have this whole bizarre plot lead to just that, like, that beautiful moment where she's like, I gotta get my life together. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it's not like, with God as my witness, I'll never shoot heroin again. You know, it's just like, shit, I get it.
This is not a much more realistic come to Jesus moment. Yeah.
So knowing nothing about any of that, it rang true to me. Like, it occurs to me I'm the least qualified person to talk about that. It didn't feel like a plot device, for sure.
Well, and also with dad, with the lady, with the thing with the sort of estranged wife lady. Like, was,
oh my
the
God,
line
they're
where
still getting a divorce? Yeah,
yeah.
Well, she says that. She, you think you were still gonna split up, or else? And she's like, yeah, if we survive, yeah. And it's like, and I know it's a weird thing to be like, fuck yes about, but it's like, yeah, fuck yes. Like, that's cool. That says
that is a thing that happens. Yeah. A lot in real life, but not in movies.
And that was the much more, out of all the weird shit in this movie, that
of which there's plenty.
Yeah. That relationship was, I think, the most surprising in like the fullness of its exploration. Like, because when you meet them and she's like not even turning to look at him and just kind of barking at him about dinner and how sandwiches aren't dinner food, and like, it seems like that's going to be a very one note character in a very one note relationship. And like, I thought we'd just never see her again. And then as she gets brought in, you go, oh shit. And when they talk about how they never have real conversations anymore and that they still care about each other, that's just, something's not, they'd be happier even with how they feel about each other if they weren't stuck in a marriage together. And I was like, fuck, I know a couple people like that. Like, that's incredibly mature and oddly realistic and way more complex than the average movie is willing to delve into. And they certainly don't give it, like, you know, because that could be an entire movie just on its own. They don't give it that much time to breathe. And so I guess I could see people thinking it's rushed or whatever, but I don't know, that felt like that was, again, like something that someone probably has a little experience with, or they were at least able to bring, it rang true to me. They were able to bring something of it to that. So yeah,
that the writing of the, all the character writing is just so sharp.
Yeah. I meant to go look and see if there's more from these people. I have not checked. I hope there is.
We got to say though, that Udo Kier's role is limited to being the voiceover of like Chompy's true voice in the void. Cause he doesn't speak when he's walking around, even when he doesn't have the giant face on.
Right.
But he when he does in the void, he can speak and he is Udo Kier.
Yeah. Which is great. R.I.P.
Well, and that's the, that was what even got this on the radar. So we also had this funny thing happen where when this came out, I think Matt and I were talking about it. And I think what happened was with our old mushy brains that we're basically like, oh, we must have done this at some point. And then Josh is like, no, we did not do this. And it's like, that can't be true.
Yeah. And I was like, how could we possibly have not jumped all over this?
Well, here's another little one thing that's been bopping around my head since rewatching this, you know, for doing, is that like oftentimes in the kind of artsy independent space, there can be things, and everybody's tolerances are a little bit different, but there are things that are just like artsy for artsy's sake, and that's like the old Warhol movies. If you ever force yourself to watch any of his fucking short films, because Jesus Christ. But or just there's things that are very avant-garde or sub-in avant-garde for douchebag on ice, like just very like intentional like art kind of things. And this one is weird in a lot of ways. This is not a normal mainstream kind of a movie by any stretch of imagination. But instead of going the route of like thinking about independent movies that people get all in a lather about, the French one, Rubber, you remember from
Long Island? Oh, yeah.
Killer Tire. So, like, you remember how the first 10 minutes of that, you go like, oh, my God, like, this is nuts. And then by about the hour and 10-minute mark, you're just like, I'm so like, exhausted. I will
find this guy and hit him. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I'm so exhausted by this self-congratulatory weirdness. And, like, and then this crazy movie, you have the thing where he's meeting up with a daughter in the park, and in the background you see this little girl walking, she's like out of focus, and this guy walks up and then goes, then his face gets gigantic, and then goes humph, and then just sort of like swallows her whole. And you're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
So like, okay. I don't think at any point from 25 minutes on through this whole thing, do they ever just pat themselves on the back, like, aren't we weird? Aren't we doing things that are weird? Isn't this the weirdest thing? Like, you know, they're never really up their own ass about that. And I fucking love that. I just love that it is weird, but they're just not super excited about telling themselves how great they are for being weird. And it's like, and that's where the good movie comes out of it. So it's like, it's this cool little magic trick that they pulled. And so it's like, I dig that. This is really nifty in that respect.
Is the thing that if you turn the dial down too far, you get bad Milo, where it's weird and everyone is so blasé about it that you don't know how to feel? Or like the dark backward, where just shit's all fucked forever and everyone is just completely low-key? So it doesn't hit that, but it doesn't go off the top end of it where it's like, aren't we just so delightfully random? And instead, it is just kind of earnestly approaching ridiculous subject matter. You know what? It's the Chuck Tingle effect.
Mm. Yeah, there you go.
Like, oh, even that's a great example.
Yeah.
Even in his like more mainstream novels, like Lucky Day just came out, which was fantastic, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Check it out. Even in the ones that are more normal, it has just these ridiculous ideas executed with absolute sincerity and precision, and it's if you like Chompy and the Girls, then maybe you would enjoy my lesbian yoga instructor, who is also a plate of tater tot hot dish gets me off, which is one of Chuck Tingle's books. Yeah. Prove love in this timeline, you can do it. So yeah, like this is just, it's a special little animal. There are so many ways that it could have just fallen off into insufferableness.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
It doesn't. Like, it makes that 20-something motor mouth kind of coked up hot mess kind of thing actually palatable, which in most movies that character is insufferable.
That's the that is a magic trick in and of itself. How is he not like? How does that not just go completely? Just shut the fuck up! Like, enough already! Like, the was the one that came out years ago with the guy I don't like, or the people I don't like, the babysitter. And I remember arguing with you guys about that one. Yeah. And I sort of like, and we're never going to settle that argument, but like. This is that character is the opposite, the kind of polar opposite of that, where you just kind of go like, it's like, I don't know why I'm not annoyed by this, but I'm not. It's
yeah.
Like,
wow. Well,
how is she so damn charming? Okay.
So it's just, this has a lot of little magic tricks to it. And yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. Honestly, I don't really know much about the people who made this. I really don't know anything much about them. But it's one of those things that, like, if you're going to do absurd things and take them seriously and weave in these ideas and some real decent salt of the earth heart to it, that tells me that you're really putting your back into it, and that's really cool.
Hell yeah.
So the list is, do you like your characters and do you acknowledge that you have an audience? And if you can do those, if you can say yes to those things, then you can make a movie like this. Instead of a movie like a lot of other ones we've seen, which are just like, you know, then you get like a Very Bad Things or Happiness or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is delightful. Just, I was utterly charmed by it. And I hope to trick Jess into watching it at some point.
Oh, hell yeah.
And by trick, I mean, I already described it to her and now she just has to see it.
Hell yeah.
Also, incidentally, I'm giving her brief plot synopses of the Friday the 13th movies as I go through them.
Nice.
And I said, you know what? I realized I could just make up anything I wanted to tell you about these movies because you don't care. You just like me, you know, and you're never going to see them. But at the same time, I can't really come up with anything weirder than the things that are happening in these
movies. It's strange credulity in reality.
Yeah. You know, you know that reminds me of, Joshua, is about 10 million years ago in my parents' first factory location in Prescott, there was a girl who worked at the factory for years, and I couldn't tell her name now. And she was like maybe early 20s, kind of gothy, kind of Winona Ryder and Beetlejuice looking person. That's in my memory. And she worked in shipping, and I would work at the shop a lot, work at the factory a lot. And so she loved horror movies. And like, I loved horror movies too, being a much younger person. But I was also would go to the video section of the grocery store, go to the horror section, get freaked out by some of the boxes and like, can't do this. And my mom's not going to watch this and whatever. And so that was all my relationship with it. Even I loved all that stuff. So Child's Play is one of those ones that she just gave me the plot of Child's Play, like bell to bell. And well before I ever saw the thing. And so I knew the plot of that and was freaked out by all the aspects of the plot of that. And then the first time seeing it, probably like later in my teenage realm, 15, 16, 17, somewhere in that ballpark. And then watching and going like, she was exactly right. There wasn't anything that was added for embellishment's sake, nothing. And it was just a one-to-one. This is like, and so what you were saying about, like, you just make up any fucking thing you wanted to. And it's like, but I mean, just if you take it off the page, it kind of, you know, it has enough seasoning as it is.
I'm still I would still love to get Jess to watch Child's Play because she insists that it's the scariest thing in the world. That's like, have you seen it as an adult? Because it is not scary in any way, even if it's trying to be, and I don't think it is. But at the same time, I said she needed to watch Gremlins as an adult, and then she would not be scared at all, because then you can realize that it's supposed to be funny. That didn't work.
Really? Yeah.
Maybe she shouldn't. Like, the joke now is my daughter, who is 10, said that one of her classmates has seen Child's Play and can she watch Child's Play? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's language, but no shit, you won't hear around the house. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think she's ready. Anyway, Sure. So this is just a goddamn delight, like a small little gem of a thing, and you love to see it. So for me, this is a good like 8.5 out of 10. Say ahas.
So if a bunch of chompies got together and all did that at the same time, would it be a seance?
Perhaps.
I had to. I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, that's right where I was going to go, too. I think it would be foolhardy not to acknowledge a few limitations in this, mm-hmm. but most of that gets made up for in just originality and heart. So, yeah, 8.5 out of 10. One of the better examples of a, I guess, quasi-horror movie that really leaves you just feeling good at the end, which is nice sometimes.
Yeah, and it's not so contrived that it feels like a Hallmarky thing, but it's still like
no, not at all.
You walk away from it going like that was a lot of fun, and it's kind got, of weird in ways.
It's got Dave Made a Maze energy.
Yes, yeah. There you go.
No, good. That's a great example.
Yeah,
where another one where it's like it's a hard one to pitch to somebody if you can just get them to watch the damn thing. It is funny you mentioned about Gremlins, Josh, because, I mean, as somebody who has seen that movie so many times, I hosted a Q&A with Zach Galligan and wow. interviewed him and did a bunch of stuff with him for Gremlins years ago for Alamo and all this kind of stuff. Watching the first Gremlins movie, the scene in the lab still freaks me out. Like, I still go, I get my fingers closer to my body, like, there's going to be a biting of the fingers. Don't like for that. No. Bad stuff. So as much affection and love that I have for it and for Dante and everybody else, it still freaks me out a little bit. Like, watch that scene. I'm glad we got a chance to do this, and I'm glad that we got to Matt. I'm glad that we didn't somehow just sort of decide that Josh had also seen this at some point and just never got it back on the.
Yeah, I felt bad for not having gotten to this earlier once we realized our mistake. Yeah.
This is like and with respect to Udo Kier, yes, this is one of the more minor roles that he has done. And so it was a funny one to choose to kind of pay tribute to in his passing, but still it's like the fact that he was involved with this project that has such good heart and decency and creativity, like yeah, it's awesome. So I'm going to go I guess I'm a low man on the totem pole. It's weirdly that way, but I'm just going to say 8. I'm going to say 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. Isn't it great when you watch a low budget thing and the digital components are so goofy looking, like Battlestar Galactica looking stuff, mm-hmm. and you go like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm fine. Like, I'm just taking, I'm good. Like, we're good.
It
like, isn't that a wonderful
tone.
Feeling?
Yeah.
I love that. Versus being like, oh, that looks like crap. You're like, yeah. It's like, hey. And I love that feeling. So, yeah, God bless this, the people that made this, and I hope they get to make more stuff. Out of 10.
Excellent. Out of 10, yes. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we will talk about things that we watch next time. That's what we do.
Yes, sir.
So next time we are going to watch one new one and a couple of old ones. We're going to watch Influencers, sequel to the really nice Bug Nutty thriller that we got a couple of years ago. Excited Hell to yeah. see that. That'll be on Shudder starting tomorrow, unless they're lying to us as they sometimes do.
Or by the time you hear this, it's on Shudder.
Yeah. No, it's tomorrow. It's the eternal tomorrow.
Oh, it's yes. I got you. There's either tomorrow or before.
It's yeah. Free beer tomorrow. And the older ones that we're watching that you can find on Amazon Prime are I'm Madman and Necropolis. And we're watching Necropolis only because it auto-played at the end of Spellbinder. And Matt watched it and thought it was fun. So we're going to do it.
Hell yeah.
So Influencers, I'm Madman, and Necropolis. And I've been Josh this entire time. And I bid you a fondue.
And we will also have a short, as per usual. This one is called Irradiation. And we'll be in the show notes for the episode on horrorshowhotdog.com. So you can find it there. Otherwise, I think this one was on YouTube, if I remember right. You might be able to find it, though it's a common word. Might be hard to find the same one. And if you do want to talk to us, shout at us, talk all that bullshit, go swing by the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord, where I hang out a lot. And you can have real-time conversations with people talking about strange things. And I bring this up because in the latest episode, Troy pointed out how there was someone asking them if they had a Discord. And he's like, God damn it. And I figured this is a good enough time as any for me to irritate him again by mentioning their Discord, but not telling you what it is. So all that being said, I've been Matt as far... Wait, no, shit, I did it wrong. As far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time. And I guess, hey, I'm sorry for screwing that up.
Speaking of screwing up, Josh, you know, and of course, Matt, you know this too with Austin, but you know how like little kids like start to understand the power of jokes, but they don't know how jokes work?
Oh, it's like exhausting.
So we went through a spell where Joe wanted to hear jokes. And so my brain, I can't remember fucking jokes in my life. So all I can remember is just little bits and pieces of things, this, that, whatever. But one of the ones did you hear the one about the gazpacho? It's cold soup. And she thought that was hilarious. But then when she tried to do it, she said, okay, mama. She had to be surprised, like, okay. And she leaned in and she goes, and she started to whisper to Kristen. And then she goes, wait. And she goes, Tata, what are we supposed to say? And I was like, what are you supposed to say? Have you heard the one about the gazpacho? And she said, okay, mama, have you heard the one about the gazpacho? And she said, no. And Joe went, kapoop! like this big old, it wasn't even poop. Like it was just like this big explosion of letters. And it was just like, with a big excitement. And she just giggled her ass off for like a minute. And it was like, she's like, I just nailed the shit out of that joke. It was like, oh, God bless them. That's just like, because no child knows how a joke functions, but they love them. And it's just like, so I thought you'd be a little bit pleased that the gazpacho joke has now made it to the next generation.
Gazpacho, the next generation.
Da, 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 da. All right, fellas, well, it's really late, so we should probably say goodbye.
All right, good night, friends.